Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn and the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as I utilize the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and a resulting outcome. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work life. This is a very special time in our workplace and world when emotional intelligence has never been more critical. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Dr. Patrick Kilcar. Patrick is a writer and therapist. He is a professor at Georgetown University, where he is the director of the university's Center for Personal Development. Patrick is also the author of a very enlightening and timely book, Leading an Emotionally Intelligent Life, Expanding Your EI to Make Courageous Decisions and Transform Your Life. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Patrick.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you, Brother Greg.
Oh, the honor is all ours. Kindly share with the listeners and me from what city and state you're speaking from this morning, please.
So I'm coming from Washington, D.C., which is just beautiful today. I think that all of the problems that are going on with our Canadian brothers and sisters seems like it's alleviating a little bit, and all the pollution is hopefully gone.
Oh, praise God for that. Certainly. Patrick, sorry to say, we've only got 30 minutes. We could spend hours talking
Yes.
about your background, your life experience. It's amazing, but we're going to jump right into the deep end of the pool, certainly.
Okay.
Emotional intelligence can mean different things to different people. Help
Yes.
us out, please. What exactly is emotional intelligence? And is it really some new aspect or discovery of how we live our daily lives?
Great question. No, it's not something new. It's been there in different ways. If we go back and we look at Thorndike and we look at all of these other great thinkers, both philosophically and psychologically, they've called it a variety of different things. And Peter Salovey, who is, I believe, now president of Yale, came up with this notion of emotional intelligence in 1995.
Wow.
And so if you asked 15 different leaders in the field of emotional intelligence to say what is emotional intelligence, everybody would say it differently. There's no pure definition.
Ah.
The way I think about it is this: it's looking at the way I understand and regulate my emotions. So the whole gamut of emotions that you, me, our audience, everybody can imagine. It's how do I understand and regulate those? And how is that regulation impacting the relationships in my life? And then how is their emotional regulation impacting my life? And I'll give you an example of this,
Please.
where recently I was talking with a woman who has been working really, really hard to be a different mother to her daughter than her mother was to her.
Ah.
And she said, "You know, Patrick, I'm looking at this beautiful little girl who just did something that really triggered me. And I was standing in front of a decision, and the decision was, do I tear her apart verbally, the way my mother did to me, or do I positively parent her and build her up?" And she said, "I tore her down."
Oh, wow.
So, which is heartbreaking. However, the piece about the emotional intelligence is she recognizes it. She wants it to be different. Far more often than not, she steps in and does it very differently than her mother did. So it's this recognition that there are certain ways we want to be in the world. And with regard to that, are we activating them? I mean, am I dealing with my emotions the way that I really want to? Or do my emotions generally take charge when it gets to a particular stress level?
Thank you so much. Great example and wonderful, wonderful definition
sure.
for the listeners
sure.
and me this morning.
Thank you.
Now, your great book mentions the notion of living an emotionally intelligent life aligns with feeling an emotionally and socially balanced in our lives.
Yes.
Why is this exactly, please?
I think there are a number of different ways of describing balance in our lives. And we all have a way of understanding what balance is. And we'll get into this, but there are these 15 competencies that this book is built upon. And they're competencies that you, me, our audience, and every biped on this planet works out of every day. It doesn't matter where we are.
Wow.
These are things that drive who we are. And if you think about emotional intelligence as it relates to personal balance, there are four competencies that are really vital, and they're competencies that I really pay attention to and certainly that I share with people in terms of is their emotional intelligence allowing them to experience this sense of well-being? So self-regard, how comfortable am I in my own skin? Am I living my life the way that I want, which is informed by a number of the other competencies, right? So self-regard, optimism. How optimistic am I in my life that if I put forth the effort and the time, if I develop a vision in my brain, if I follow a particular path, how optimistic am I that I can achieve it? And this is a big thing. And to your point earlier, we could talk hours about just optimism. And it's something that in and of itself at the University of Pennsylvania, it's a course. And that's where University of Pennsylvania, from which emanated this whole notion of how do we really understand optimism in our life. So optimism, relationship strength. If I think about all the relationships in my life, how strong are they? How connected am I to the people around me? Do I have people around me? Am I more of a lone wolf? So the strength of my emotional relationships. And then the last one is not aligned with Maslow, but it's this notion of self-actualization.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Right. Remember back the triangle and Maslow, you're self-actualized when you're at the very tip of the triangle.
Sure.
Well, this is different than that. It's more the self-actualization is to go to this notion that I've thought about doing something for a long time. Let's say entering a religious order. I've thought about it. I've lived my life. I'm contemplating it. And now I believe is the time for me to move toward it. And achieving what is important to me, that's being a self-actualized person, that I've got a goal. I'm moving toward it. That goal in moving toward it is making me a better man or woman, a better person, a better human
being. Wow.
So those four, I mean, I know that we always kind of categorize things, but those four things, the self-regard, relationships rate, optimism, and self-actualization allows people to see amidst all of the other data in their life, are they stuck? Are they moving the way that they want to? And if not, it allows for the opportunity to find out what's getting in the way and then to move past it.
Wow. Thank you so, so much.
Sure.
And that dovetails nicely with the next question. I think you've answered a part of it. You may want to peel the onion just a little bit more. Why do these competencies matter so much in regard to emotional intelligence?
Because it provides a map, Brother Greg, a map. And a map shows where we've come from, you know, our life, people we've been connected to, things that we've accomplished, things that we have not accomplished, dreams that remain unutilized, dreams that remain kind of, in the background and they've been unrealized. These 15 competencies, it starts with self-regard, it ends with optimism, but it looks at, let me give you an example.
Please.
I had a young woman, and I have this example is in the book as well, but I had this young woman come to me and she said, I don't know what is wrong. I've got really good friends. I've got an active life. People really enjoy me. And yet I feel off balance. So she took the EQI, and I'm going to lay out what these 15 competencies showed her. When people look at page 3 of the EQI report, they see a lot of material, a lot of numbers, things that may be low, like I may be low in assertiveness, I may be high in emotional independence. To them, it's numbers and bars. To me, it's a narrative, it's a story. And what she had was very high on emotional awareness. So emotional self-awareness for this woman was very high. Emotional self-expression was exceedingly low.
Wow.
And I'm going to get to kind of bringing it together.
Please.
Stress tolerance for her was one of her highest competencies. Now, I remember when I first did the EQI, and I'm in front of this woman who's giving me the feedback, and my highest score was assertiveness. And I thought, that's great. You know, I want to be an assertive person.
Sure.
And as she starts talking about it, I started getting more and more uncomfortable. And she said, you know, why are you getting so uncomfortable? I said, well, it's kind of turning out that high assertiveness is not a good thing. She goes, you're right. It's not a good thing in relation to your other competencies because it's overutilized. So it was moving from being assertive to being aggressive.
Wow.
And I all of a sudden, it was this major wake-up call. So for this woman, her highest score was stress tolerance, which was not a good thing. It means that it's far, far too overutilized. And her social responsibility score, which is doing for others, was just a little bit behind stress tolerance. So let's look at these four scores. The emotional self-awareness, very high. So she's very aware of what she's feeling. She's very aware of what's going on in her world. But then when it comes to talking and sharing and letting people know, nothing. She doesn't say anything. And since everybody sees her as so available, she carries everybody's stuff.
Oh, no.
Emotional, right? So then there is the stress tolerance and social responsibility, again, very high, allowed her to just continue to reach out and give to others. And yet, as she said, I feel in looking at it, it was her aha moment. She goes, you know, I feel like a human doormat.
Oh.
And so that gave her the opportunity to really reconfigure what she wants to do with this emotional self-awareness. What does it mean to find her voice? What does it mean to talk about the things that she needs in the world? To take on less, from friends, just to take on less, and to be actually less socially responsible because she just loses herself in doing for others. So that's where that notion of why are these 15 competencies important? And here's another way to consider it. Imagine a mobile is hanging from the ceiling. You know the little mobiles that babies have that are hanging over and they move around and the
yeah.
babies are transfixed by the motion. But if you're looking at it and there are 15 little things on this mobile and you touch one, what happens? They all move.
Oh, wow.
Affecting one and truly understanding what that effect looks like begins to have an effect on all the others. If that kind of makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, you know, living an emotionally intelligent life, it's not an event. It's not like we get on a train and it drops us off at emotionally intelligent. We're always moving toward it. Sometimes we get very close and then we drift. And other times we get close and we drift. It's much like that mother feeling horrified at being mean to her daughter in being horrified, though, was her opportunity to get closer to that relationship with her daughter that she wants.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so beautiful how you're creating more and more emotional freedom for
Thank
your
you.
clients.
Thank you.
Now, it's interesting because you mentioned, you inferred in just what you said a few minutes ago, that there are some things in our daily life that detract us or pull us away from living a consistently robust socio-emotional existence.
Yes.
Can you share a couple of those, please, with us, Patrick?
Sure, absolutely. If everybody listening to this podcast, if we were in this gigantic group together and we looked at one another and we guessed, what do these people do? You know, they'd look at you and they'd guess, and they look at me and they'd guess, and what they'd see are people that have it together, smart. You know, they want to better their lives. They want to do more. They want to give more. They want to, you know more and more. What does it mean to really live a spiritual life? Which, again, is somewhat like emotional intelligence. You don't arrive there. You continue to move toward it. But what they don't see, what I don't see, and what you don't see, are the hills that they had to climb and claw up to get to this moment in time. The trauma, the drama, the loss, the pain,
wow,
the worry, the doubt, the anxiety, the depression. We don't see any of that. I had a friend of mine years ago. We were walking, and he said something that to me was incredibly profound. And we're walking, and he goes, you know, I wonder what it would be like if, like in the movie or the book, The Picture of Dorian Gray, where this painting of this young aristocrat or royal, I don't know what it was, but there was a painting that was made of him that for some reason allowed him to have enduring youth. He never got older. But the painting took on his sins. The painting took on the things that he did in his life that were mean or sinful or whatever it may be. And so over time, this painting just became horrible.
Oh,
and
wow.
Because he never changed. He always was young and vibrant and smart. But my buddy said, you know, what would it be like, do you think, in the world, if people could see our emotional pain? How would it be different for all of us? And I've thought about that often. And there is no way to do that. And probably we would not want to do that, other than to be able to be in a place where we can tell our story, where we can talk about. And you know, AA and NA, the anonymous groups,
sure,
they create that platform for people to be able to go in and be around other travelers who understand and tell their story. Beyond that, though, we don't really have that. And I, even if we did, I don't know what it would look like, but I think it would be worthwhile.
No question about that. Now, you mentioned the clients featured in this great book of yours. Say they're ordinary people. I mean, to me, they're extraordinary, but they make extraordinary choices and decisions to live a life of courage and transformation. Help us out, please, Patrick. Why does it take courage to become more emotionally intelligent? Why is courage so important?
No, what a beautiful question. If you think about this, there is this saying, and I forget who said it, but whoever said it, I think they were absolutely right. The world would be a better place if everybody else would change. We don't want to change. You know, we don't want to have to do things different. We don't want to step out of our quote unquote comfort zone. We don't want to all of a sudden find ourselves in a place where we're taking social risk. And what I mean by that is this, that there is a difference between taking social risk and risk taking. Risk taking has a real high percentage probability of going poorly, of there being a negative consequence.
Sure.
You know, jumping out of a plane, taking 21 shots on your 21st birthday, whatever. There's generally, there's a potential downside to it. taking social risks, there actually is no downside. And what I mean is this, that if I was alcoholic, and I'm aware that I'm alcoholic, as most people who find themselves in that place, they're aware. And I go to an AA meeting, and I'm sitting in the AA meeting, and I'm nervous, I'm worried, I don't want to say anything. But I'm sitting there, and then somebody gets up and says something which all of a sudden resonates with me. And the meeting is over, and I walk out. The courage in that moment was to go into something we don't want, potentially hear something that we don't want to hear, because we're going to probably have to stop something we want to do.
Wow.
And that's that piece of walking out of that meeting, hearing something important. The social risk was going into the meeting and finding that AA was absolutely worthless. It offered you nothing in the world and you left. But that's generally not what's going to happen. You go in and something within that experience speaks to you as positive and allows you to grow stronger as a human being. But change, Brother Greg, change is just hard.
Sure.
And very few people really want to go through it. And especially, you know, in the book is there's so many of these different stories and so many of these individuals who did really, to your point, remarkable things. However, in the beginning, they didn't want to. They just, I mean, I can't tell you how many people would have said to me, No. I'm not doing that. And we would talk about, okay, absolutely, you don't have to. Yet, what do you do then? Because you're now a victim of your knowledge. You now are aware of the things that are in the way, the things that bump up against you, the things that detract from you being your better self in the world. So what do you do? And there's some people that I've seen over time that literally just turn it off and they keep traveling toward what they're doing. And ultimately, they hit a wall.
Wow.
So that it's this piece of, to your point, I think it's a wonderful point. It's just being able to say yes to change. You know, what does it mean? This woman that yelled at her daughter and hurt her daughter, she could have come into therapy and not said a word about that to me. She came in and said, I don't want to be this person. What do I do? Oh. And, you know, there's another piece to it, too, in that what I have seen, and I don't have any data on this, but I think that the correlation is pretty strong. When people come into therapy, they often come in and there are parts of who they are in the world that are broken. There's something that's not working. Within that, they also don't have a sense of spirituality. No matter what religion someone was or was not born into, they come and they begin to search in the world for something that makes sense. And they don't know how to do it. They have a lot of questions about spirituality. And obviously, you know, I'm not in campus ministry. That's not what I do.
Sure.
But it's the piece of, I see people searching and trying to understand, what does it mean to be connected to a higher power? The anonymous groups, all that's a critical part of it.
Yes.
And, you know, people, inviting people to know more about what that means to them is the very least that I can do. And who to talk to? Where do you go? What do you do with it? And I've also seen that as people become far more emotionally intelligent, this notion of feeling far more spiritual also exists. I mean, they kind of go hand in hand, which is, I mean, again, this is the world according to Patrick, but I've seen it fairly regularly.
I know in my own life, as I become a little bit more emotionally intelligent, the spirituality has come along with it. So there's no doubt about that.
Yes.
Sadly, yes. We can again talk all day. We've only got about 6 minutes, but I've got a couple more important questions for you, Patrick, if that's okay. You
Thank you.
gave us an example before, but I want to peel the onion on this a little bit more because the saying in your book is so wonderful. Whoever said sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never matter, you say is working with a very small sample size. Why does what we say matters, particularly to younger people?
When I have a 9-year-old, I married later, so I have a 9-year-old, I have a 7-year-old, and a 6-year-old.
God bless you.
Thank
Wow.
you. And these kids are remarkable. They're also kids who can be a remarkable pain in the butt and who can drive you to your knees, make you wonder what were you thinking when you decided to have kids, all of these things, right? And that's just good mental health, because if you're not asking these things, there's something wrong. But it's because these children at this age, first of all, they can't care for themselves. They are 100% dependent on the adults in their life.
Sure.
And we had our son was at school the other day, and one of the teachers said to him, "You are not going to be ready for first grade," which is, oh
No.
yes, which is not true. But the teacher said it, and my wife, sent a note and said, what's going on? The teacher felt terrible. But it's that moment where the teacher, there was something going on where the teacher felt overwhelmed, wasn't sure what to do with it, and then boom, this pops out.
Oh, wow.
But our son came home, and he was genuinely upset.
I could imagine.
He thought he wasn't smart. He thought he wasn't going to be able to do things. So what we say absolutely matters. In most of the time, yes, has there been physical or sexual abuse in clients that I have or people that are listening here? Yeah, absolutely there has been. The majority of the abuse, though, is verbal. It's
Wow.
more, and in the there's this one story in the book that this woman told the story about her two brothers. And she goes, "It's not that I thought my parents preferred my two brothers, my twin brothers, over me. It was absolutely blatant." And there was this moment where they were going to go out for pizza. The aunt was in town, the mother's sister. They were going to go out for pizza, and they were going to go to the circus, something that was really big.
Sure.
The father said to her, "Listen, here's $10. We'll order pizza for you at home. Aunt so and so is going to go to the circus with us."
Oh,
Yes.
no.
And so here's the piece. Not only did the father say this, but then the aunt said nothing. She
Oh.
got in the car, and they all went off, and she sat there, and you can imagine what went through her brain. She wanted to run away. She wanted to do all these things.
Oh.
Right. It's those are the moments that I don't understand. I can understand getting mad, sure. I can understand saying something that I really wish I hadn't, sure. And owning it, being responsible for it. But that is terrorism
Wow.
at a very clear level that I don't understand. And this woman, smart, really smart, wounded in a way that has been remarkable, has lived her life by herself, no friends, nobody. She lived it, and she was a software engineer, so that she could just be alone doing her work.
Sure.
As she began to take social risks, which was a lot more than just social risk, it was this emotional risk, she now has developed a social network. She's doing things in the community.
Oh, wonderful.
It's remarkable, and it's shocking to me, though, Brother Greg, how much people have really and continue to suffer.
Yeah.
And so, this EQI and the 15 competencies, it's one of those opportunities to hopefully use it and suffer less. Coaches, therapists, people, within ministry, we're always looking for that, that golden goose, that one thing that's going to make all the difference for the people that we see. This isn't it. It's more, though, it allows me to frame things in a way that makes sense to me and also create hope for those who are
And that hope
sitting
is so
in front of
critical today more than we've saved the most important question for last, Patrick. From where can our loyal listeners purchase Leading an Emotionally Intelligent Life? How can they best follow you, please?
Amazon. Just go to Amazon, Kilcarr, K-I-L-C-A-R-R, and it'll be there. And then Kilcarr, K-I-L-C-A-R-R-P, at georgetown.edu. Send me a note if there's something. And then I also have a website, the eilife.com. And that in some of those places, somebody can get me. I'm pretty sure.
Right. Listeners, no excuse. Patrick is all over the place. This book is all over the place. Please,
thank
please,
you.
Please. We have a great Franciscan with us this morning. He could have held on to the good. No, what did he do? He wrote this great book. He shared the greatness. He shared the good. He came on, thank God, for Monday with us today. Shared more good. Now it's your turn. Buy one copy. I'm going to challenge you to buy more copies. One for yourself. One for graduates. College graduations are over, but I'm sure you know a few. High school graduations are taking place still. Please, please, please share the good. This is the book.
And one thing, that you have the book, Transform Yourself, Transform the World. Both books have transform in it. There's something good cooking here. That I know.
No doubt about this. And please also, listeners, take full advantage of this great report, the EQ-I 2.0 Comprehensive Feedback Report. That'll really be enlightening for you as well.
You're wonderful.
Dr. Patrick Kilcarr, can't thank you enough. You are the best, certainly. Thanks for coming. Excuse me.
You're wonderful. Thank you so much, Brother Greg. And to everybody, all the best.
Enjoyed having you today.
Right.
Listeners,
bye-bye.
Sorry to say, we're out of time. Brother Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Patrick does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.